Our scripture reading this morning is from the second chapter of the Gospel of Luke. Now every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. And when Jesus was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them, and asking them questions. All who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." Jesus said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and divine and human favor. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So whenever I hear this story of the boy Jesus being lost and left in Jerusalem, what always comes to mind are stories that I know personally of children being separated from their parents. I'm sure it's happened in all the congregations I've served where as you know, everyone is finally kind of leaving and the staff are getting ready to go, there'll be a little kid standing there and you say, "What are you doing here, Bobby?" And they're like, "I can't find my parents." And what you quickly realize is that mom and dad came in separate cars, and for some reason mom thought Billy was with dad and dad thought Billy was with mom. And usually in a few minutes, parents, once they get home and realize Billy's not there, someone calls church and they come back and pick little Billy up. I know that's happened. I have very specific memories of that at my first congregation and once here at Holy Cross. But I also think of a more personal story where I wasn't, the pastor who kind of chuckled at the fact that someone's kid got misplaced, but I was the parent who lost a child. Deb and I and the two boys, back when they were young, were flying to Seattle for Christmas. I can't remember how old the boys were. I'm thinking Brett was probably, maybe being held by Deb still, and so Joel was a little tyke, kind of too big to carry, but I was in the lead. This was back in the days before we had cell phones and we knew exactly at what gate and what time, and so you had to, race out and find the board and find your connecting flight, and we didn't have much time, and so I kind of told them, "You all stick with me. Joel, you stay right behind me, and Dad, you, and I'll go to the board and we'll figure out where we're going." So got off the airplane and I am beelining it to the board to find out where our next flight is, and finally Deb catches up with me and says, "Where's Joel?" And I say, "He's right here," and he wasn't. You have that momentary panic. This is, Christmas Day or the 26th at Denver International Airport. The place is packed. The only good news is that we were at the end of a terminal, so there's only one direction he could have went, and so we start moving that way looking for him, and I can't remember if there was an announcement on the overhead or if we just saw him, but we finally found him with someone who worked at one of the airlines, and he was not just talking to them about airlines and astounding people at his knowledge, but he held it together until he saw us. And then I remember he broke into tears, which I'm pretty sure Deb and I did too. So we had that brief moment of, you know, of panic, and then that wonderful feeling of being brought back together. But, you know, this story, I have to admit, I'm not sure I've ever preached on this story before, which means I've never really read it very closely before. But when I read it closely, preparing for this, I noticed a line that kind of changes the story for me. The text says, when the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. I realized then that this really is not a story about a child kind of accidentally being separated from his parents. This is a story of an adolescent. Jesus is 12 years old, we're told. This is a story of adolescence rebellion. And I don't mean rebellion in a negative way. It's easy for me to say that because my kids are grown, but what 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds are supposed to do, what's normal and natural for them, is to pull away from their parents and their family a little bit, to start trying to figure out who they are separate from this unit that they've always been a part of. Kids at this age are asking a lot of questions, but kind of the two main questions they're wrestling with are the questions, who am I and whose am I? That first question, who am I, is a question of identity. What do I believe? What do I value? You know, little kids, they just believe whatever their parents believe. But when kids hit that adolescent age, they start forming their own beliefs and opinions, and they search out other people to get more input. So they want to figure out, what do I believe? What do I value? They also want to figure out what they're good at, which is also a way of asking what I'm good for, in the sense of what's my meaning, what's my purpose, what am I here to do? The second question, whose am I, is the question of belonging. I know I fit in with my family, but where else? I don't want to be with my family all the time now. You know, as they become adolescents, kids begin to see the flaws in their family. Whereas as they're little kids, you know, parents are perfect. But as they get older, they start to compare, and so they want to figure out, where else do I fit in? Where do I belong? Where will I be accepted for who I am? Those are kind of the two big questions of adolescence. When I was at St. Timothy's, my last call, I was specifically in charge of the youth. And I spent a lot of time with those kids. We met on Wednesday nights and Sunday morning for Sunday school. We had monthly activities, and we also took big summer trips. And back then, I didn't use this language of whose am I and who am I, identity and belonging. I didn't use those exact terms, but as I look back on the youth ministry I did during those times, I realize that the most profound moments of youth ministry were really about when kids got a sense of some of those answers. Two specific stories come to mind, and they both took place on trips that we went to Mexico. There's an organization called Casas por Cristo, which means Houses for Christ. And what's so cool about this program, and why I took kids to it three times, even though it was complicated and expensive and difficult to plan, is you would fly down to Texas, and then you would meet up with one college student who was your building supervisor, and then Monday morning you would cross into Mexico, You stayed at a church, which really was very primitive. There was one bathroom, maybe a shower, and maybe you didn't want to go in the shower. You had to bring all your own food and prepare all your own food. But then Monday through Friday, you literally built a house from scratch. And when I say house, obviously not the houses that we live in, but this was like, usually a 10 by 10, 20 by 10 foot house with a cement floor, walls, roof, doors, windows, electricity, no plumbing. But you built it from, once again, when you showed up that first day, it was a patch of ground. And when you left on Friday, it was complete. And you handed this family who you had worked with all week the keys to their house. It was a very powerful experience because the work was hot and dirty. And once again, you didn't go back into some air-conditioned hotel with a pool and a hot tub. You went back to this church and you slept on the floor and you had to make your own meals. It was really hard work, but super rewarding work. But the first story that came to mind took place after we'd finished that week. So we had been there and we'd built this house together, and now we were back in El Paso, and we were going to stay at a hotel for two nights before we flew home. So we came back, we were going to spend all day Saturday playing around, and the plan was to go to a water park. And so we got back, we all went to our hotel rooms and showered and showered and showered and finally kind of got clean. And I remember we gathered in my hotel room and talked about the plans for the next day. And I was the kind of person who organized money in little envelopes, which is a different story. but anyway, I had the envelope with the cash to go to the water park the next day. And I can't remember how much it was, $300-$400. And so as I was telling the kids, we'll get up at this time and eat breakfast and then go to the water park, yada, yada, yada. One of the kids said, "You know, there's a pool here at the hotel. Why don't we just donate that money to CASAS and we can just stay here at the hotel and play in the pool?" And that might not sound like much, but you have to understand that all week long, one of the things that the kids talked about as they worked in the really hot, miserable weather was, "We're going to spend a day at a water park." And so not only had these kids given up a week of their lives for very hard work, for people they didn't know, who they would never see again, they also decided to give up kind of the big reward at the end, this day at the water park. You see, that's, and I didn't realize it then, and I wouldn't have used this language then, but that was about identity. These high school kids were getting a sense of who they were, what they valued, what they were there for. It wasn't just about them. They were people who wanted to help even complete strangers. They had a sense of what their purpose was. That second issue of belonging, one of the other favorite youth ministry stories, this was, the last trip I went to on a Casas por Christos trip, and this also took place after we got back in El Paso, getting ready to go home. It was Sunday morning, the morning we had to go to the airport and fly home. And so we were packing up from our hotel rooms, and got to kind of explain a few things here. When we were there, we rented vans from Casas por Christo, and they had built these huge metal racks on the top of the vans because once you put 15 kids in a van, there's no room for their luggage. So they have these just huge open metal racks on the top of the vans. And so I had told the kids the night before, get up at this time, go have breakfast, pack up, put your luggage on the rack on the vans, and then when we're all there, we'll go. We have to leave by this time to get to the airport by this time. So we'd all eaten breakfast. We were all finishing up packing. I was up in my room putting the last few things in my suitcase when all of a sudden Danny came into my room. and I said, Danny, you all packed? And he said, you can't kill me, Pastor Jim. And I promise, that's exactly what he said. And I think he said it two or three times. What, Danny? You can't kill me, Pastor Jim. Danny, you got to tell me what you're talking about, or I will kill you. And he finally said, I don't remember what he said, but basically, you got to come see this. So I said, okay. Now again, I got to explain something. This was a hotel that you didn't exit your room into a hallway, you exited onto the outside. And Danny and I had rooms on the second floor. And so you came out of your room onto a walkway, and then you go down to a set of stairs, and this is the kind of stairs that you go down half a flight, and then there's a landing, and then you go down the other half of the flight. Well, if this is the landing, the van was parked right here. And remember, the luggage rack is on top of the van. And so as Danny came down the flight of steps with his luggage, he came up with a brilliant plan. Instead of going down the other flight of steps and then having to get his suitcase up into the back of this van up on the racks, he thought, while I'm up here, I'll just toss it onto the van. What could go wrong? Well, what went wrong was he didn't throw it hard enough. And so instead of landing in the luggage rack, it landed right on the windshield. The only good news is it landed on the passenger side of the windshield, at least. And this is why Danny thought that I would kill him. And again, it's been a long time. And I honestly, I can't tell you all that went through my mind. What I do remember is standing there on that landing, looking down at the van with the suitcase still, you know, halfway through the windshield, with Danny next to me, and the other 25 kids and sponsors all standing around the van, now also looking at me. And for whatever reason, as tired and as stressed as I was, I found the grace inside of me, surprisingly, and said, Danny, it's no big deal. That's why we have insurance. And I really think I obviously didn't kill him, didn't even come close. I didn't even lose my cool that time. And again, I wouldn't have used those words at the time, but I think looking back on it, the instinct inside of me was that one of my main goals with youth ministry and with youth groups was that sense of belonging. Whose am I? And I had an opportunity in that moment to not only let Danny, but all those kids know that they were a part of that group even when they messed up. Even when they did stupid things like throw luggage into windshields. I don't know, I hope that affected Danny and those kids like it's affected me. But that was a powerful moment again, for me at least, and hopefully for them, of getting a powerful sense of what it meant to belong to a group of people who really, truly did love and accept you with all your flaws. Who am I and whose am I? What's my identity? Where do I fit in? I wonder if those were the questions that the 12-year-old Jesus was wrestling with when he decided, intentionally, I think, according to the text, to stay in Jerusalem. I wonder if when he had gone to the temple with his family sometime during the festival, that he got some sense that there was something here that gave him a sense of who he was and whose he was. And so when it came time to go home, he rebelled a little bit and said, I'm not ready yet. I want to stay here and explore this sense of who I am and whose I am. And I think we get a sense of how Jesus answers those questions with how he responds to his parents when they tell him how freaked they are about having lost him. I kind of want to read this in that snarky adolescent voice, you know. What are you doing? It's like, why are you looking for me? Don't you know I got to be here at my father's house? See, Jesus, I think, was beginning to get some answers to both of those questions. Who am I? Well, I'm a child of God. And if I'm a child of God, then my values and my what I believe in is shaped by who I am. And whose am I? I'm God's. I belong to the people of Israel. I belong to God's family. I think, Jesus comes from this little dinky village. I think all of a sudden this sense of belonging to something bigger, having a purpose greater than just getting through day by day, I wonder if that's what this is about for Jesus. This kind of first taste of an identity and a sense of belonging to something bigger than just Mary and Joseph and his other brothers and sisters. These questions of identity and belonging are not just questions that adolescents ask. They ask them, I think, the most feverishly because they're so new to them. But these are things that we all wrestle with throughout our lives. And one of the reasons we do that is because things change. All of a sudden our identity might change from being a single person to a married person, or a person without kids to a person who have kids, or a person who has to care for their aging parents. And where we fit in and where we belong, sometimes we discover that a group of people we hung out with doesn't really fit very well anymore. Because it's not a matter of if, it's when you're next struggling with those two things, who you are and whose you are, what are you there for and where do you fit in? I hope and pray that your identity as a child of God is one of those things that can ground you enough to let you wrestle with the other parts of it. Because that's what being a Christian is about. That's what baptism is about. God names us and claims us. God says, you are my child now, gifted and sent. You have a purpose. You have a place to belong. No matter what else changes in our lives, as so many things do, those two things never change. You are a beloved child of God, no matter what. And God has called you to do God's work in the world and God will always be there to help you do that. Thanks be to God. Amen.